order. Good morning. We're going to start with a public hearing. I'm going to open a public hearing on House Bill 3461. And Patrick, you want to fill us in?
Yes, Madam Chair. House Bill 3461 displaces competition in the annual ryegrass and tall fescue seed industries with state regulatory programs. It has an emergency clause that would take effect upon its passage and signature by the governor. We did receive, I'll note, that the fiscal impact on SMSs may have fiscal impact, not yet issued. We have been told that the bill will probably have a minimal fiscal impact. I have nothing else to say.
Thank you very much. We have Representative Jeff Krupp here to testify on 3461. We'll let you go first since you have a very busy schedule. Good morning.
Good morning, Madam Chair, members of the committee. For the record, I'm State Representative Jeff Krupp, House District 17, here to testify in favor of this bill as a fifth-generation Oregon farmer and a grass seed producer myself. This is really born out of legislation that I introduced on behalf of the Perennial Ryegrass Bargaining Association some years ago. And it was to codify in law a mechanism by which farmers and seed dealers could come together and reach an agreement on basic issues surrounding marketing and oversupply of particular types of grass seeds. And the reason that that occurred is because, there are very strict laws about, in antitrust law, about these types of issues. And so a mechanism was put together in a bill that I authored on behalf of the PRBA, Perennial Ryegrass Bargaining Association. And it has allowed for a number of years now farmers to come together with seed dealers, talk about all the issues that are surrounding a particular market for perennial ryegrass and where they should set their pricing, which is the pricing that is then generally followed in the industry. And I say generally followed in the industry. Contracts are typically based upon those pricings. Individuals who do not grow perennial ryegrass under contract are free to sell their product at whatever price point they want. And so this generally has worked fairly well for the most part. They've made some adjustments. The first time we've ever done anything like this, and the Perennial Ryegrass Bargaining Association has done some good work, I think, in meeting some of the concerns of some of their growers not entirely happy with how they did their pricing and those types of things. The process, I think, has worked pretty well. Well, there are other grass seed producers that have faced similar issues and, frankly, are interested in exploring the possibility of having this type of a legal opportunity extended to them in the law. Amongst those are annual ryegrass growers, of which I am one. And I think that it's an idea worth exploring. I'm not sure that they're actually going to engage in this process of forming this organization if the law is granted, simply by virtue of the fact that ryegrass is just about ready to head out and we'll be cutting it by the middle part of June, as I think we're probably going to have an early season. And it's probably going to be a bit late to do that in this year. We'll have to see. But I think it's a worthwhile idea that you would explore, both on based on the experience of the Perennial Ryegrass Bargaining Association and the similar opportunities being extended to a couple of other different types and varieties of grass seed that's grown here in the valley. As you know, Oregon's Willamette Valley produces the bulk of the entire world's supply of various types of grass seeds. Whether they're used for lawns, they're used for pastures, or used for golf courses, we are the world's supplier by far and wide of those types of materials. It's a unique industry to us in the valley. And it ties into one of the other bills that, or a series of bills, as you know, are biofuels legislations that we have working its way, hopefully, through the process here. In that, the changing dynamics of Oregon agriculture have led us to be producing less row crops. We've lost a lot of our food processors in the state of Oregon for a number of reasons. So the farmers that were growing row crops, irrigated crops like corn and beans, are growing less of those acres. And guess what they're growing in place of it? Well, they're growing grass seed. And what that means is there's a much larger supply of grass seeds of all types, just about, than what the marketplace is for. And what does that lead to in a market-driven economy? Well, it leads to oversupply, lower prices to producers. That's pretty normal. And what this is a way of farmers, again, coming together with dealers, which would normally be considered an improper relationship, to allow them to come together to not totally set the price of a particular commodity, grass seed commodity being sold, but to establish kind of a floor and establish some of the issues surrounding what will happen in that given year. I think, again, it is a worthwhile idea. I'd like to have you consider it and probe it and explore it and see if you think it's appropriate to extend it to a couple of other grass seed varieties. I'm in favor of that, and I would hope that you would find that favorable also. With that, Mr. Chair, I will take any questions if you'd like to.
Thank you, Representative Krupp. Any questions? Representative Haas.
Thank you. I always think it's interesting, Representative, when you talk about trying to decrease and displace competition with more regulatory programs. So I just find that interesting. What does it mean to a limited degree?
Mr. Chair and Representative Haas, could you restate that, please?
Well, in the new wording says solid fescue seed industries regulatory programs to a limited degree. So it would displace competition of regulatory programs to a limited degree. And so I was just wondering.
Mr. Chair and Representative Haas, I think that a better explanation for that verbiage could come from Dave Nelson when he comes forward to testify. My guess would be, again, that's basically what I've said in terms of the example of what's occurred in the PRBA, and that you set some of the pricing in general. And that's what I think we'd probably refer to as a limited degree. It is not a total pricing scenario that is accepted in the marketplace, because again, there are still members or individuals rather who are not members of the perennial ryegrass bargaining association, for example, that do not have contracted varieties. They have uncontracted varieties, and they're free to sell that to anyone in the marketplace at any price. The advantage to the farmer who has a contracted variety is that they know precisely what they're going to get from the contract. So when they go into the bank and say, I need my production loan for this year, the bank's going to look at them and say, okay, what crops have you sold? And well, they're going to say, in this case, my tall fescue I've got sold at such and such a cent under contract, and the market was set at that by the Tall Fescue Bargaining Association. And the banker will go, that's a good thing. If a farmer was not in that place, in other words, wasn't growing under contract, the marketplace might come harvest time, there might be very big yields. The marketplace might realize it's got a glut on the market now from big yields, and the price might drop below whatever that farmer could have sold for if he had contracted. That's the risk that the farmer runs in those kinds of scenarios. So that, I think, is what it's being referred to as a limited degree. It still allows farmers who choose not to participate, not to participate. They don't have to be a part of it. If they want to be involved in the bargaining association, they want to grow crops under contract, which most of the time I recommend as a farmer, then they can choose to do so. And I think, again, the reason that this scenario works and it's legal as defined by the Attorney General, because they're really the ones who developed this basic premise, is the reason is because it isn't. It allows some flexibility. It allows farmers to opt in or opt out, basically. So, I hope that answers your question, but I would say that Dave Nelson probably can give you a much more cogent answer than I can.
Thank you, Representative. Is there another particular reason you're here today? Another bill?
Mr. Chair, yes, is the weed bill that that you have in front of you. I think we want to, at the request of ODA, we may want to make a one-word change in that, and I would ask you to allow us to do that in the...
What bill is that?
That would be House Bill 2577, which came out of my weed control task force and ensuing work group. It basically codifies something else.
For the record, I'm going to vote for the work session concurrently with 2577. Right now.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Again, for the record, State Representative Jeff Krupp, House District 17, 2577. I would ask you move that bill in its current form. I think we're going to want to make perhaps a one-word change over on the Senate side. It's really irrelevant to the overall intent of the bill. Again, the bill basically just clarifies that the Oregon Department of Agriculture is the one-stop shop for weed control issues and money that may come from the federal government.
Senator Representative Krupp, you're amenable to Amendment 1?
Yes, Mr. Chair.
Okay, thank you. Are there any questions of Representative Krupp before we go back to the other issue? Thank you, Representative.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members?
I'm going to close the work session on 2577. We're still in a public hearing on 3461. And Dave? Hello? Dave, you're next. You're...
You just keep jumping around, I think.
Chair Boquist, members of the committee, my name is Dave Nelson, the Executive Secretary of the Oregon Seed Council, and with me is Mike Hayes, who's a real grass seed grower, if you want to see one, from Lebanon.
We noticed the suntan.
Vacation.
And also Brent Searle with the Oregon Department of Agriculture, who is provides the administrative staff service to the Perennial Ryegrass Bargaining Association, has the solid technical background on having worked with the Perennial Ryegrass Bargaining Association for the last 4 years. And Brent can answer some of the technical questions that you may have. But what House Bill 3461 does is add two species of grass seed that are produced here in Willamette Valley to an already existing program that has been functioning well in the Department of Agriculture, and those two species are annual ryegrass and tall fescue. The legislation is permissive and does not mandate creation or functioning of any bargaining association, but allows the growers and the dealers to, if they choose to do so, to form a cooperative and negotiate for a floor price or for a price for annual ryegrass and tall fescue. It's interesting that we produce about almost 100% of the annual ryegrass that's grown in the United States here in the state of Oregon, and somewhere in the neighborhood of 50-60% of the tall fescue that is tall fescue seed that's produced in the United States. The other competitive region for that is the state of Missouri. They produce what's called Kentucky 31 tall fescue seed, which is basically harvesting pastures that are planted in Kentucky 31 for forage purposes. Participation in the program, as Representative Krupp said, is purely voluntary on behalf of each individual grower, and it's also voluntary on behalf of the seed dealers. The original bill, House Bill 3811, was passed by the legislature in the 2001 session. 3811 provided a mechanism for perennial ryegrass growers and seed dealers to meet and bargain prices with member growers. The bill's primary purpose, however, is to create a structure where seed dealers can, in fact, meet as a group and talk about prices, which that kind of activity is prohibited under the restraint of trade laws and price-fixing laws of the federal government. The bill was created came out of a lawsuit that was between the Perennial Ryegrass Bargaining Association and two seed companies, and a federal judge from Eugene showed the group working with both sides' attorneys how to structure a program where seed companies could get together under the canopy of the Department of Agriculture and not fall in violation of restraint of trade laws. So House Bill 3811 passed the 2001 session. If you look at page 2, it was the vote record on House Bill 3811 in 2001. Passed the House on the consent calendar, 57-1, as I recall reading that. Now Senator Schrader was absent, and Representative Gardner was excused. Passed the Senate by a vote of 26-1, so there was, and Representative Haas, you voted for it. Good bill. So, Mr. Chair, that's a summary of House Bill 3461. It's simply an addition of two commodities to two species of grass seed to an existing program that has worked well, that has really been operating smoothly. I don't know of any opposition in the grass seed industry or anywhere else to this bill. Mike will now give you just a little background of where their interest came from.
Thank you. My name is Mike Hayes. I'm a fourth generation grass seed farmer from the Albany-Lebanon area. For the past several months, annual ryegrass growers and tall fescue growers have been getting together and talking about some stabilization for prices. We seem to see a huge swing in the annual ryegrass, high price, low price. Generally, it all gets used every year. We don't really have that much of a surplus. Sometimes we see a bit of surplus. But we've been looking at the PRBA and seeing that they have been successful in their marketing association. So annual ryegrass growers along with tall fescue would like to see, have an opportunity to at least try to get a marketing association together like PRBA. Most of the input I've gotten from growers and dealers has been very positive towards this. They all see a need for this kind of legislation. So I have a few growers that came with me here today in the back there. You obviously heard from them a moment ago. Anyway, we're very interested to see this pass. So that's where we're at.
Thank you.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, for the record, Brent Searle. I'm Special Assistant to the Director at the Department of Agriculture and have been supervising the bargaining process with perennial ryegrass for the last 4 years. Incidentally, as I was preparing my testimony, the date on the previous testimony was April 25th, 2001, exactly 4 years ago today. So a little bit ironic there, but clarification. My role in the department is to supervise the bargaining council, which is made up of the Perennial Ryegrass Bargaining Association representing growers and the dealers. I don't work for the bargaining association. I work for the Department of Agriculture. As you'll see in my testimony there, I'll just summarize this quickly. In 1922, Congress passed the Capra-Volstead Act, which gives growers the ability to form bargaining cooperatives or associations that allow them to pull their commodities to sell, to give them more ability to function in a marketplace. They can do this. They have to form as a legal organization, but in doing so, they can only bargain with one dealer at a time. Otherwise, bringing more than one dealer together is a violation of antitrust law on the dealer's part. And so what we're talking about that was created under House Bill 3811 is to allow more than one dealer to meet with this bargaining association at the same time and under the auspices of a state agency. And that provides the antitrust immunity to all the parties in this process. As indicated, we've been doing this for 4 years now with the perennial ryegrass process. The bill before you adds two additional grass seed varieties. I've detailed a little bit there. I won't go into this except to say the Department of Agriculture's role is articulated there in items 1-6. That's our regulatory authority. And to the question, Madam Chair, Representative Haas, on displacing competition to a limited degree, that's really a federal nomenclature for state oversight of being able to bring more than one dealer together so that, in essence, you're to some degree limiting competition, but you're still considering all the market factors in those negotiations that would have an impact on that price setting. So it's a limited displacement of competition by bringing more than one dealer together.
Thank you.
Hope that helps.
Madam Chair, I just, in addition to trying to give some grief to my friend Jeff Krupp, that's really all I want to know. Is this the sort of the boilerplate language,
yes.
Limited degree? Thanks.
Yes.
Thank you very much. Any other questions for this panel? Gee, you guys must have done a great job. Thank you very much. Is there anybody here that wants to testify further on House Bill 3461? With that, I'll close the public hearing on 3461 and open the public session on House Bill 3461. Representative Boquist?
Madam Chair, I move House Bill 3461 for due pass recommendation.
I have a motion from Representative Boquist to carry, to move House Bill 3461 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Clerk will call the roll.
Representative Boquist?
Yes.
Representative Burley?
Yes.
Representative Pass?
Yes.
Representative Roman?
Yes.
Representative Sumner?
Yes.
Representative Byers?
Yes.
And Chair votes yes. That would have been one. Having received the required number of votes, we've passed House Bill 3461 to the floor with a due pass recommendation, and I'll have Representative Boquist carry the bill and close the work session.
Okay.
I'm going to open a work session of House Bill 2120. And Patrick, do you want to bring us up to speed on what, because we've had public hearings.
Thank you, Madam Chair. House Bill 2120, the committee heard originally on March 21st. It increases the application fee for some operating permits granted by the Department of Geology and Mineral Industries. It adjusts tonnage fees for aggregate and mineral ore extraction, increases the maximum assessment for staff time and related costs in cases where the reclamation plan has changed. This measure, because it deals with increasing fees, of course, has a subsequent referral to the Committee on Ways and Means. And if the committee has any questions, we have Gary Lynch from the Department of Geology and Mineral Industries and Rich Angstrom representing the couple.
Great. Why don't you two come forward and then identify yourselves. Representative Boquist, do you want?
No, Madam Chair, I'm just going to
make a move. Okay. Well, I just kind of wanted to get them to give us an update because they asked us to hold it.
Rich Angstrom, president of OCAPA. There's a lot been going on since then and trying to dig into Dogami's budget as we've been working on the Ways and Means side. Realize that we have a little more of a shortfall than we thought we did in the budget. Our membership is now considering the pennies per ton model that Representative Byer was and I were talking about last time. Don't have a consensus on that, but the board's position is to support Dogami's budget to make sure that we fund the program, and we had a board meeting since our last meeting and had a official position on the bill.
Thank you. Lynch, do you
want to add anything? Madam Chair, for the record, Gary Lynch, Assistant Director of Oregon Department of Geology and Mineral Industries, and I don't think I can elaborate on that any better.
All right. Thank you. Any questions of this panel? Representative Boquist, now I can take your motion.
Yes, Madam Chair. I move House Bill 2120 be moved with a due pass and a referral to Ways and Means.
Thank you. I have a motion from Representative Boquist to move House Bill 2120 with a due pass to with a subsequent referral to Ways and Means. Do I have any discussion? Any questions? Clerk will call the roll.
Representative Burley?
Yes.
Representative Katz?
Yes.
Representative Roblin?
Yes.
Representative Sumner?
Yes.
Representative Byers?
Yes.
Representative
Gopis? Yes.
And Chair
votes aye. Having received the required number of votes, House Bill 2120 is moved to the Ways and Means Committee with a due pass, and I'll close the works. We'll open a work session on House Bill 2577, and Patrick, you want to tell us a little bit about that one?
Yes, Madam Chair. House Bill 2577, we heard on April 6th. It's a measure that identifies the Department of Agriculture as the primary state agency for assisting coordination of noxious weed control programs. It requires the department, in conjunction with the state weed board, to develop a plan for noxious weed control in Oregon and to help secure federal and private funding for weed control projects, and requires a report to the Legislative Assembly on or before October 1st, 2008. Included in your packets are the Dash 1 amendments to House Bill 2577. Those were provided to committee staff by Representative Krupp. His office had those amendments drafted. I believe if the committee has any questions as to this, well, we have Tim Butler in the room from the Department of Agriculture, who would be able to answer any questions if the committee has them.
So we need to move the Dash 1 amendments.
Yes, Madam Chair. And the bill has no referral, so we go straight to the floor.
Okay. I guess.
Madam Chair, I move the 2577-1 amendment to the bill.
All right. I have a motion to move House Bill 2577,
The amendment.
The amendments, the Dash 1 amendments to House Bill 2577. Do I have any discussion? Representative Hass.
Well, I think it makes a lot of sense to implement the existing plan instead of, you know, starting all over on a new plan. I guess my question would be, why aren't they doing that now? Is legislation really necessary?
Okay. Patrick, do you have we can have Tim Butler come up and maybe answer that. He can try to answer that. Good morning.
Good morning. Good morning, Madam Chair. For the record, my name is Tim Butler, Oregon Department of Agriculture. To answer the question as far as implementation of the noxious weed plan, currently we are implementing the plan, the components of the plan that we can, with the resources that are available. So it's been an ongoing process. The plan identifies, the state noxious weed strategic plan identifies 11 primary objectives, and we're in the process of implementing those, again, with the funding resources that are available. So I think that what House Bill 2577 accomplishes is helps to kind of solidify that effort and identifies that in statute as far as the Department of Agriculture having that primary responsibility to help take the lead in working with cooperators to implement the strategic plan.
So you see the Dash 1 amendments at House Bill 2577 as strategically placing it in statute. Am I correct?
Madam Chair, that's correct.
Does that answer your question, Representative? Wonder why we're doing it.
Yeah.
Representative Roper.
I just want to ask a question.
Sure.
It came up actually at a coffee this week. That the weed board tends to give out grants to local counties and communities after they write a request. And that the feeling has been that they have been relatively small, 20,000 or so, and annual as opposed to longer. And I guess what I would hope is that a consideration continue with agriculture, if it hasn't already, that they'd be a longer duration, a little bigger, because some of these issues are, as we know, ongoing, and having the resources to be able to combat it is important. So I guess has there been a policy, small annual grants from the weed board?
Madam Chair, Representative Roblin, in answering your question, yes, there has been longer grants. We require the grantee to reapply every grant cycle, but there's been many grants that are ongoing. We certainly realize that the noxious weed control issues is longer than just one grant cycle, and it's an ongoing effort. And so we have been, that is certainly taken into consideration, but we can't, the board does not allocate funds for more than one grant cycle at a time. The applicant needs to reapply. And certainly if those projects have merit, those are projects that are given priority as far as funding. And so it's an ongoing process. I think to address the question as far as the $20,000 to $25,000 range in the grants. That is not a hard number. The thought process there was to try to get as many dollars to help stimulate weed control activities around the state as possible, and I think that we're accomplishing that. That's not to say that the board hasn't awarded larger grants, you know, in the $30,000 to $40,000 range too. So there's again limited monies there, and they're trying to make the best use of those to help stimulate weed control activities around the state.
Follow up: is the asking to continue one? Is it the same process? I mean, the same amount of grant writing. The effort, one of the concerns was the time and effort spent each time doing another application seemed to be onerous to some of these. The issue that came up in our area was GORST, which continues to be a problem. And we seem to have lost control of GORST right now in our
right.
area. So that's where it was coming from, the frustration of the person. So.
Right, and I can understand that. I think that certainly we're always looking for ways to help to streamline the process, and we're working towards that. So if there's ways that we can accomplish that, I'm sure that as far as the department and the state weed board certainly would take that under consideration and look for ways to improve that process.
Thank you. Any other further questions? Mr. Butler?
Thank you very much.
Great. Thank you.
Well, committee, I would take a motion. Representative Belfast, do you want to move this? Oh, you moved the dash one.
I've already moved the dash one.
Yes, he has. Yeah. Already moved the dash one.
I solved that motion.
Clerk will call the roll.
Representative Hatt?
Yes.
Representative Roblin?
Yes.
Representative Sumner?
Yes.
Representative Byers?
Yes.
Representative
Belfast?
Yes.
Representative
Fraley?
Yes.
Yes. We moved the dash one amendments to 2577.
Madam Chair, I move House Bill 2577 as amended to the floor with the due passage recommendation.
Thank you. I have a motion to move House Bill 2577 as amended to the floor with the due pass recommendation. Any discussion? Yes?
Madam Chair, just to kind of address it, because since I'm a farmer too and I understand weeds, a little bit. One of the challenges that we face in the state is it's been a hodgepodge. The weed board identifies and the legislature directed previously to develop a one-time plan. And just as a good example, I have a ranch in Wallowa County and exploring in Union County. And if you're in Union County asking about weeds, you get one answer. But as soon as hunting season comes up, they actually set up a checkpoint on the county line.
Mm-hmm.
And then the next weed control board takes over there, and then when you try calling the extension service, you kind of get a mix of answers. And the intent here is, of course, to solidify it in the long term and say the Department of Agriculture is the point of contact, and then they can be the resource and disseminate out to the 36 counties so that we have, you know, one voice speaking, and then it's all coordinated amongst itself. That's pretty much the intent of the bill.
Thank you. Representative Pass?
No.
Any other discussion or comments? Clerk will call the roll.
Representative
Roblin?
Aye.
Representative
Sumner? Aye.
Representative
Byers?
Aye.
Representative
Belfast?
Aye.
Representative
Fraley?
Yes.
Representative
Hatt? Yes. Yes. We have received unanimous votes to move House Bill 2577 to the floor with a due pass as amended, and I will appoint Representative Krupp as a carrier. We'll close the work session on House Bill 2577. Open a work session on House Bill 2927. Patrick, do you want to tell us about this last
bill? Certainly. House Bill 2927, we heard on March 30th. The bill allows the Board of Directors for our Soil and Water Conservation District to issue general obligation bonds with the approval of a majority of the electors within the district. This measure has a subsequent approval of the Committee on Revenue. And we have dash three amendments, I believe they are, which have been worked out in accordance with John McDonald of the Oregon Association of Conservation Districts, who would be more than happy, I'm sure, to answer any questions the committee has or even to speak, to give an overview of those amendments to the committee.
Great, thank you. John McDonald, I'd like to have you come up and maybe explain to us what the dash three amendments do.
Yes.
Sure, that'd be great.
He knows the things I don't.
Oh. Thank you. Go ahead. Could you maybe just fill us in what the Dash 3 amendments do?
Yes, Madam Chair, members of the committee, I'm John McDonald, Executive Director of the Oregon Association of Conservation District, landowner, farmer from Hillsboro. I raise hazelnuts. The reason for the amendments is because the original bill, 2927, as printed, came back from the Legislative Council with a few, shall we say, missing requirements. We took that and took it to council, referred to us by the Special Districts Association of Oregon, so that we would make sure that the wording was correct. It was an Ann Sherman, who was our legal advisor in Portland. She's a member of a local law firm there and does consulting work for SDAO. And she sent back some suggestions for changes in order to make it an effective general obligation bond measure. It was missing the whole idea about that part of this is that you would have the ability to request the electorate to actually provide tax funds for the general obligation bond. Then it came back again, and the reason there's a number three is that some words were taken out and some words were put in, and then we finally got to the third one that included it. For example, the second one was it left out the ability to assess the tax to pay the principal and only to pay the interest, which we thought was maybe not quite complete. So now it says principal, interest, and premium, which we found out can also be an issue if there's an early buyout or something like that. So now we are comfortable that the words are there. It again has been confirmed by council that that we are now in good standing with the modern, up-to-date way of doing business with the general obligation bond.
Thank you.
Thank you for your comment.
Any questions or comments?
Nothing.
Just if there's any questions from the committee? I don't see any. Thank you very much. I'll take a motion to move the Dash 3 amendment.
Madam Chair, I move the Dash 3 amendment to 2927.
Thank you, Representative Roquist. He's moved the Dash 3 amendments to House Bill 2927. Do you have any discussion? Clerk will call the roll.
Representative Sumner?
Aye.
Representative Byers?
Aye.
Representative Roquist?
Aye.
Representative Braley?
Aye.
Representative
Pass?
Aye.
Representative Robin?
Aye.
Votes aye. We've moved the Dash 3 amendments to House Bill 2927. Need a motion to move this as amended?
Madam Chair, I move House Bill 2927 as amended to the House floor with a do pass recommendation. With a referral, I guess, with a referral to Revenue.
That's okay. I'm glad I'm not the only one who gets these all messed up. We have a motion to move House Bill 2927 with the Dash 3 amendments with a do-pass recommendation for a subsequent referral to the House Committee on Revenue. Any questions? Any discussion? Clerk will call the roll.
Representative Byers?
Aye.
Representative Roper?
Aye.
Representative Burley?
Aye.
Representative
Pack? Aye.
Representative
Roman?
Aye.
Representative Sumner?
Aye.
And Chair
votes aye. We move House Bill 2927 as amended to the House Committee on Revenue. The do pass recommendation. Thank you very much. And with that, we'll close the work session on House Bill 2927. And committee, see no further.